Hello and welcome to another edition of the ILO's Future of Work podcast. I'm Sophie Fisher. Today we're going to focus on youth employment because a recent ILO report has produced some findings that, at least initially, seem strange. Despite a slight improvement in the headline youth employment figures, the report has found that unemployment and job insecurity are a growing cause of anxiety and worry among young people. The report also highlights a trend that might seem a little technical, but is in fact something we should all be concerned about, and that's the rise in the number of NEETs. That's young people who are not in employment, education or training. So, what is the picture for young people who either recently joined or are trying to join the world of work? Now, to talk about this subject today, I have three guests. First is Sarah Elder, who is head of the ILO's Employment Analysis and Economic Policies Unit. She was also a lead author of the recent report, Global Employment Trends for Youth 2024, Decent Work, Brighter Futures. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you, Sophie.
Morgan Williams is an intern for the ILO's research department. Morgan has also contributed to Future of Work topics at the ILO, the OECD, and as a Youth 7 delegate. And for those of you who don't know, Youth 7 is the official youth engagement group of the G7. Tino Gwenyaya is also an intern at the ILO's Sectoral Policies Department, and his work focuses on a number of areas, including the impact of AI in the workplace and social dialogue and collective bargaining in some services sectors such as healthcare and arts and culture. So Tino and Morgan, welcome to you too. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Great. Okay, well, let's start with the report. Sarah, the numbers showed a full recovery in youth employment since the pandemic, around about 2020 and 21. And yet, young people are pretty downbeat about their prospects. So what's going on here?
That's right, Sophie. And you picked up on the contradictions that run throughout the report. And we have some very good news, which is that the pandemic is behind us. And the youth unemployment now at 13% is as low as it's been in 15 years. So, I mean, that's pretty spectacular. But behind this very rosy picture, I think we see some nuances that are very important for us. One being that this recovery is not universal. Youth unemployment numbers have continued to rise in some regions of the world, like East Asia, Arab states, Southeast Asia, and the Pacific. And also that even if jobs are seemingly plentiful, decent jobs still remain very, very few.
By which decent jobs, you mean decent jobs that have some sort of stability, some sort of permanence, and some sort of social safety net.
Absolutely. Right. And in terms of who gets these jobs, it's extremely unequal across the globe. So we have in high-income countries, 4 in 5 young persons are working in a regular paid job. In a low-income country, this share is 1 in 5. I mean, it's really, the difference is outstanding.
So what you've got here is potentially a widening of the fissure between young people in higher income countries and those who are born and educated in lower income countries.
Indeed. And the irony is that the bulk of the population remains in the developing countries. So when we think about the future, it really should be about making opportunities better for young people where they are.
Yes, because of the nature of demographic changes. Mm-hmm. Right. So let's just move on briefly to this question of NEETs, young people who are not employment, education or training. Is this a global matter? Is it associated more with developed or developing countries? Specific groups of young people, divided by gender, divided by ethnic background. Tell us a bit more about it.
Yeah, it's a very complex picture. Globally, the share is 20%. So 1 in 5 young people across the globe is neither in employment or education. But it varies widely. So the share in North America is 10%. The share in Arab states is 40%. And it becomes really much, very much a gender story. When 2 in 3 young NEETs across the globe are young women. And that's what's driving the high shares in Arab states and South Asia. It's primarily young women that are still excluded from the education system and from the labor market.
And is this a temporary effect? I mean, if you miss the jump, or you don't make a smooth jump from statutory education into employment. Is that just a one-off problem, or does it have a lasting legacy?
Some of our statistics show that there is indeed a legacy. So if you are, if you start out as a NEET, you might remain a NEET. You might never join the labor market. And again, this goes back to the story of the gender story. Young women just simply by social norms are excluded and will be rather looking after the household. But other statistics in the developed world show that it is indeed harder once you start out having lesser education or having a long spell of unemployment. It is indeed harder than to get back into the labor market and to reach the same level as those who moved more smoothly.
Okay, let's turn this over to Tino and Morgan. You are, of course, both currently working for the ILO, albeit as interns. But tell us a little bit about the issues you have faced in actually getting out of education and getting into the world of work. Tino, let me start with you.
Yeah, is highlighted in the report. I think the report reflects the realities of many people like myself finding work after being educated. It remains a challenge, but also finding work that is decent and permanent, that also pays a living wage, it remains a challenge for many people.
And Morgan, when you first started looking for work experience, what were the kind of issues that you faced?
I think a prime issue that we face, especially as Sarah highlighted in the Global North, has to do with having experience just to even get an internship. It's very difficult to make that first step because now the standards are getting higher and higher just to reach the base level. Now we have a lot of people, especially in North America, as the report highlighted, that are overqualified for the jobs that they're doing, overeducated, because the standards to get a job is much higher. Now we're seeing for an entry-level job, you may need 3 or 5 years of experience to do a job that someone just out of their bachelor's or master's degree can do.
Sarah, this business of being overqualified for jobs, is it only in developed countries like the United States? Or, I mean, I've heard of it in places like India as well.
It's a big problem. So what we find in the report, we mentioned that there's, again, good news in the fact that more young people are able to get educated. And there's a clear gain here. Yet, what happens is in countries where there are not enough higher level jobs, young people have to take what is available, which means they take jobs for which they're overqualified. And it's really a matter of the economy not keeping up and not able to produce the number of higher level jobs that the educated young people would want.
Tino, has that been your experience too, for yourself and basically your friends and colleagues?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, where I come from in sub-Saharan Africa, generally there is high levels of informality, I think, compared to most parts of the world. That means a lot of young people are rather going more into the informal sector than the formal sector when they exit there. So it's basically as a result of the lack of employment opportunities, but also because the informal sector maybe has got more in terms of control. You are able to control your outcomes, your income, and it might actually have much more secure forms of employment compared to formal employment in some instances.
Really?
Yes.
Tell us more.
Well, they are also high levels. I think the report does highlight that not necessarily the report, but there has been some growth, particularly in the services sector. And a lot of the jobs in the service sectors do not necessarily guarantee long-term employment. So that means you are much more likely to be better off than being in a situation in which you control your socio-economic activities and also your income out of that process. It's just a mismatch in between the informal and informal sectors for many young people, based on the reality that there aren't also enough jobs in the formal sector and the jobs that are already there are less secure.
Sarah, picking up on what Tino said, I mean, there is an idea that employment is in fact a phenomenon of rich countries, because in sub-Saharan Africa and countries like that, you can't afford to be unemployed as a young person. You have to do something, which means the informal sector. Is that true?
I mean, that's right. And that's exactly what the statistics show. I mean, in sub-Saharan Africa, youth unemployment is actually quite low. I think it's 8%, which means you are basically facing a situation of full employment. But there are very, very few of these jobs that meet the expectations of an educated young person. So the queue for a formal sector job is longer and longer and longer. So you are competing amongst your peers to get that job. And if you don't manage to get that job, you take up the informal sector job that is offered to you. And so these are the temporary jobs that Tino mentions.
For you two, I mean, you know, a decade or so ago, it would have been normal for young people of your age category to start thinking about maybe buying property, taking on a loan, a mortgage for that, perhaps getting married, perhaps having kids, you know, taking on the responsibilities that of adulthood, mature adulthood, rather than young adulthood. I mean, do you find your inability to find decent and stable employment is affecting your decisions and those of your friends on those matters?
Definitely. And I think it's certainly the case when you think about starting a family as a woman. When you have temporary work, you have no guarantee that you're going to have work again after you have that child. And although I'm not quite at that stage where I'm ready to have kids now, I do think in 5 years or so, will it still be the case that I'm in this cycle of temporary work, unsure if I'm able to support a family?
Tino, would you agree?
Absolutely. I have to mention, because the report does note also a post-COVID recovery. But what we've also seen, and I think the report acknowledges that, is a rise in the cost of living for many people. In sub-Saharan Africa, that has been the case. Certainly in South Africa, where a lot of younger people are finding it difficult to afford a house or to afford really challenges associated with meeting the basic cost of living.
Right. This moves us neatly on to the other issue that was raised in the report, which is this question of rising anxiety, which is rather strange. Morgan, Tino, what do you think this is based on? Is this simply based on the difficulties of getting the kind of jobs we've been talking about, or is it based on the broader social and economic context? I mean, thinking of conflict, climate change. What we're seeing is happening to democratic institutions and, you know, the ups and downs of the economic environment. Where do you think it comes from?
Well, I certainly think economic factors play a big role. In the United States in particular, I think loans, taking on student loans, taking on mortgages, taking on that debt creates a lot of anxiety that's going to exist for a long term, 10, 20, even 30 years into your career. But on top of that, I think that something that wasn't highlighted in the report but makes a impact on our anxiety is the prevalence of technology and social media, constantly comparing ourselves to others, having algorithms that are digging us deeper into holes where that are affecting how we think, of ourselves in comparison to others as well.
I absolutely agree. I would add also just the changes in the world of work, you know, associated with burnout, for example. You know, jobs that are insecure certainly have a role to play in the mental health of many young people today. I think that can be compared to earlier generations, where jobs were much more secure, where incomes maybe could have been higher, and there wasn't intense work. Perhaps that's for historians to compare. But certainly, I think that does play a role in terms of the mental health of young people across the world in general. It's not just in the developed countries. Also, in Africa, young people also face those kinds of mental health challenges on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, and of course, your generation is going to have to deal with the workplace impact of AI, which is, of course, something that none of us know how it's going to play out, except that it's going to have a significant impact. Do your friends talk about this, your cohort?
Yeah, it's something that is of concern. Though maybe much remains to be seen in terms of the impact on working conditions, or improving maybe improving work that might either improve work or make it a bit more challenging, therefore worsening the conditions. But I think it's certainly something that preoccupies the mindsets of many young people today.
Yeah, I certainly agree with Tino, and I think it's still yet to be seen what the impact on working conditions and wages will be. But I think a conversation that I'm having a lot with friends is the impact of AI on recruitment and hiring, particularly video-based AI interviews, AI screening that are often marketed as tools to increase diversity, but there are actually a lot of risks associated with these tools if they're not implemented appropriately. And so my concerns are, how are governments and employers going to implement policies that ensure that these algorithms are promoting diversity and not perpetuating existing systematized biases? Perhaps this could be through algorithmic audits or impact assessments, but it's definitely a topic of conversation that I've had with friends searching for work.
Yeah, because an algorithm is only as good as its programming, right?
That's right.
And the programming reflects the past and not the future.
Indeed.
Okay, let's not leave this on too depressing a note. Let's try and be positive and look at the what can be done and what should be done. Sarah, you're on the policy side. Let's start with you.
Okay. Well, let me just say I'm fascinated listening to Morgan and Tino, and it really does remind us there's a world of worry on their shoulders.
As they try to enter the world of work.
As they try to enter the world of work. Move into the stage of financial independence. Yep. There's a lot to worry about, which means that it's on the part of us as the institutions to keep the hope alive and to remind you that you are part of the solution. As young people, you can empower yourselves, you can vote, you can remain politically engaged. And the institutions themselves need to make sure that you are heard and brought on board when it comes to policy makings. Now, governments are already doing a lot, and we recognize the governments do recognize that youth employment is a top policy concern, but they can be doing a lot more. Oftentimes, the solution set falls a bit more on what I would call the supply side, the skilling of young people, which puts the burden back on young people. I think we need to remember that the burden is on the side of governments and the economy to continue to grow and to continue to invest in the type of jobs that young people want. Employers need to listen to you to make sure that they understand what is the type of job that you are interested in, that they're able to recreate a model of existence that is able to make sure that you feel valued, that you feel heard, that you receive the wages that you need. Therefore, they will be preventing the high labor turnover that is a huge factor in their loss of productivity. So we need to get back into this model of producing good jobs. And employers have a big role to play in there. Labor unions have a role to play in there, and governments as well.
Yeah, and educational institutions. So it's not just on governments, it's on the whole range.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tino and Morgan, if there was something that could be done, practical or policy, to help you and your cohort find decent and productive and work that had a future, can you think of one or two things that would help particularly?
Well, I think, as Sarah has mentioned, there has to be a lot of investments in education, and also aligning that with the broader economic needs. I think that has to be there has to be a lot of that. I'm just speaking in terms of where I come from, that a lot of young people need really the skills, in order to participate in the economy, but also that the economy needs to be in a position also to absorb young people who are willing to innovate, also improve, and contribute to society.
Morgan, let's give you the last word.
Thank you. And so since Tino made a great argument for the supply side, I'll make one for the demand side, maybe giving a little bit of recommendation to employers to be very mindful about how you present entry-level jobs and job postings and job offerings on the internet. You want to meet young workers where they are, post the job postings where they are on LinkedIn, on social media platforms, on the internet, and make sure you're providing the necessary information they need, whether that be the years of experience, and being very mindful of including maybe the wage on that job posting.
Morgan, thank you very much. And unfortunately, that's all we have time for in this podcast. So my thanks to my three guests, Sarah Elder, who is a lead author of the recent ILO report on global employment trends for youth 2024, and Morgan Williams and Tina Gonyaya, who are both interning at the ILO. And good luck to you both for the next stages in your career. Thanks also to you, our listeners, for your time and your attention, and I hope you'll join us again soon for another Future of Work podcast. Meanwhile, you can always follow us on the main social media networks, which include, of course, X and LinkedIn. But for now, from me and from the rest of the podcast team, it's goodbye.